I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we're going to learn more this afternoon about how state Democrats plan to further destroy our economy. Plus, rhetoric is ramping up against two voter initiatives, and words have consequences. And a new bill would carve out a special tax on paid protesters. Maybe the one new tax I could support. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A special welcome to all our newest paid subscribers to the show. We appreciate you coming and taking advantage of this sweet promo deal that we had on Cyber Monday, which is now over. So if you missed it, you missed it, but you can still support our show. Surprised to see me this early in the day? Well, I'm surprised to be awake this early in the day. We had to move up our show time by 2 hours. I'm sure it caught some of you off guard, but I can't think of a more important place to be this afternoon than down in Olympia to hear from Democrats about how they plan to further destroy our state's economy. Of course, we broke this news last week, and it's scheduled for today. State Representative Sean Scott, the only avowed socialist in the Democratic caucus in Olympia, is going to be on the steps of the state capitol at 1:30 this afternoon, and he's going to be laying out his plan for the Well Washington Fund, which is a nice name, I guess, but it involves taxing businesses in our state even more, to the tune of $5.5 billion per biennium. And this would come through a 5% tax on employer payroll expenses above $125,000 a year. So in layman's terms, this is a jobs tax. This is a tax on high-paying jobs statewide. What other place has a tax on high-paying jobs that didn't work out and hasn't worked out very well for them? The city of Seattle. The city of Seattle passed a tax on high-paying jobs. What did Amazon do? Well, it took at least 10,000 jobs, even more by now, I think, and moved them over to Bellevue. Okay, so it moved them to Bellevue to escape the tax on high-paying jobs in Seattle. Well, what's going to happen when you pass a tax on high-paying jobs statewide? Well, all of a sudden, moving those jobs to Bellevue doesn't do very much for Amazon anymore, does it? No. So Amazon, like Microsoft, just threatened. You'll recall the president of Microsoft, Brad Smith, came out last week and he said, tax us more and we're leaving. If this tax climate doesn't improve, we are going to move jobs out of the state. So we have some of the largest, well, the largest employers in the state of Washington who contribute exponentially to our economy, who are basically saying, try us. This is what we're going to do. If you want to call our bluff, by all means. But when Amazon said that's what they're going to do, they did it. Microsoft says we're going to do this. There's no reason to believe that they're not going to do it. And this comes at a time where we already have a lot of other bad economic and financial news happening in the state of Washington. Just a couple days ago, Meta came out and said that it is abandoning plans for an expansion in the Spring District in Bellevue. So they were going to expand into all these new buildings. Now they're saying, nah, we're not going to do that anymore. Now, part of that is the fact that all these tech companies overhired during the pandemic. And that's just a reality. Of course, AI factors into this. But the economic conditions in Washington state factor into it as well. And then there was this report out. I mean, bad on top of bad on top of bad on top of bad, as Sean Scott gets ready to have his press conference this afternoon, from the National Taxpayer Union Foundation. Washington state has some of the highest rates of taxpayers fleeing to more tax-friendly states. In fact, they say a taxpayer moves to Florida every 2 minutes, and a taxpayer leaves California every minute. And in Washington, someone new leaves Washington every 29 minutes and 55 seconds. Every 29 minutes and 55 seconds, a taxpaying citizen of Washington state decides enough is enough. I'm going to move somewhere else. And a lot of those people are moving to the free state of Florida, where taxes are not so strangling. So in the background of all of that, restaurants closing left and right, the homeless and crime crisis scaring people out of downtown Seattle to the point where we have a 33% vacancy rate and 0 square feet of new office space under construction in a city that 5 to 10 years ago, you couldn't look anywhere on the skyline without seeing a crane. And Sean Scott is going to be on the steps of the state capitol this afternoon at 1:30 p.m. detailing $5.5 billion in new taxes on businesses. And yours truly will be there as well to ask him the questions that the legacy media will not ask him. So that is why we have an early showtime today. So I'm sure we'll have lots of eventful stuff to discuss with you tomorrow. All right, I pushed out some news late last night, and I've told you guys, I mean, I tried to kind of tell you probably too much about my life. Is that fair? Mm-hmm. I share too much. But there are some things that I can't share with you. And part of that is sort of the ebbs and flows that we deal with safety situations. And that's for good reason. But when cases head towards being resolved, then I can be a little more forthcoming about what's going on. But certainly after, you know, I was down in Portland and Antifa over the summer with the anti-ICE protests. And when I was at the White House, we definitely went through a period of a little heightened security concerns. And on top of that, my support of the controversial issue of no dudes in girls' sports has also, over the last few months, made me a target of crazy people. And so, you know, I want to share this not like a woe is me, my life is so dangerous, but more so about the dangerous rhetoric that's going around that gets in the mind of these unhinged people and encourages them, makes them believe that they're justified in threatening people's lives, in assaulting people. And at some point, this has to give. So you'll recall, gosh, this is like 2 or 3 months ago now, we were starting to see all these attacks and harassment and threats of signature gatherers for the two Let's Go Washington initiatives, one of them to protect girls' sports, the other one to protect parental rights. And we played many, many videos of various things happening in various places. But one of the things we played, there was an incident in Spokane where a guy was collecting signatures outside a grocery store. And this woman came up to him. She had her kids with her, and she was signing the two initiatives. And then this unhinged lunatic recorded herself threatening to hit this woman in front of her kids. And then she took to her TikTok account to kind of celebrate and justify her own actions in threatening this woman. Here's the video we played for you a couple months ago on the show.
No one gives a f- about Jesus. Get the f- out of my face before I slap you.
Why would this basic white b- be signing something about girls? Little girls.
I am not a nonviolent person. I'll slap you in front of your kids because I don't care.
I am not a nonviolent person. I'll slap you in front of your kids because I don't care. So we played that. What we didn't tell you, and I do apologize, is that there was definitely some further activity involving that woman who we've since identified as Deborah Yepes of Spokane. So I covered the story of what she did to that woman in front of her kids at this grocery store in Spokane. As you know, I talked about it on the show. Well, she did not like that very much. And she took to her very active, I think she has several thousand followers on TikTok, and she very blatantly threatened to come to my home to harm me. When
you're this conservative cunt in Seattle, Brandy Cruz, she does Undivided. I need to find this woman. Can someone help me find her? Because she's so gross. I'm about to get in my car and drive to this motherfucker's house. Like, what? You're out of your damn mind. You're obsessed with trans. I'm going to whoop the ever-living shit out of your white ass.
Okay. She also said I look like a Sister Wives reject, which I take great umbrage with, and which should in and of itself be a crime. But alas, the only crime she committed there is threatening to come to my home to harm me. What was particularly concerning to me, because people say unhinged things on the internet all the time, although this was obviously very an actionable, I'm going to come to your home and do this. What concerned me at the time is the fact that she'd already shown a willingness to confront someone in person and to threaten to do them harm, the woman at the grocery store in Spokane. And so I did file a police report against Deborah Yepes, and I'm happy to report that police and prosecutors took it seriously. And she has since been charged with harassment, a gross misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail. She already had her initial court appearance. She pled not guilty. She has another court appearance on December 7th. And I'm hoping that they continue to make her come to this side of the state because what's, you know, one of the interesting things about this, I'll say, is that she filed something with the court essentially saying that she has financial difficulties and therefore can't travel from Spokane to King County because the case is out of King County because that's where I live. And so she has, you know, all these financial hardships. And so she wants to be able to do the court hearings virtually. You know, the first thing I thought of course you do. This is someone who posts TikTok videos like 5 times a day, still to this day, 5 times a day. And you have financial hardships. Here's some advice. Get a job. Because if you're on there posting TikTok videos 5 times a day, harassing people at grocery stores for exercising their right to sign an initiative, threatening some podcaster who you don't like, something tells me you have more time on your hands to work if you're really having financial difficulties. I also want to say, and this is important, that my case involving this woman is apparently not the only one. We knew that there was an active police investigation in Spokane into her threats against the woman in front of her kids. And in fact, the police report in my case confirms that Spokane PD does have an active case involving Deborah Yepez. So she now, because she's doesn't agree with what is a very common sense opinion that girls should or boys shouldn't play in girls sports, she's now facing 2 criminal cases. And the thing is, it's like, is that worth it? But then you look at and look, there's clearly something wrong with her. I mean, and I absolutely feared that she would try to come to my home. Now, would she say, beat my white ass? I don't think that would have gone the way that she intended it to go. I am a black belt after all, but also I don't think that that would have had a positive result for her. But her rhetoric, and Nicole, can you play the video where she's threatening me again really quick? There's 2 things I want to point out in it.
When you're this conservative cunt in Seattle, Brandy Cruz, she does Undivided. I need to find this woman. Can someone help me find her? Because she's so gross. I'm about to get in my car and drive to this motherfucker's house. Like, what? You're out of your damn mind. You're obsessed with trans. I'm gonna whoop the ever-living shit out of your white ass.
Yeah. So 2 things. First of all, her child is in the background. She's got a young son. How disgusting is that? That you're saying things like that in front of your young child. And it's hardly the only video where she speaks like that and has, you know, vile, violent rhetoric. So that was just disgusting. But the second thing, and I could play the totality of the video, but she talks a lot about how I'm obsessed with kids' pee-pees and touching their, you know, pee-pees and weird stuff. And I'm thinking, where is that coming from? Well, you know where that's coming from. The Washington State Democratic Party, WA Families for Freedom, and the Teachers Union. Her rhetoric in these videos that have now landed her in 2 criminal cases, it mirrors the rhetoric being pushed out by the anti-initiative crowd, by the progressives. I mean, we've talked about this group, which again, you know, it's so fascinating. They call themselves WA Families for Freedom, but it's tactical. And why? Because they know that Washington families want freedom. They don't want this version of freedom. So they call it that to mislead people. But what do they say in here? That if we pass this initiative to protect boys' sports, then it's going to force kids into invasive genital exams. And so, and they call these initiatives dangerous. And they talk about how dangerous, and they're going to force kids, and kids could be exposed to a greater risk of abuse. And they don't think that those words have consequences? I mean, think about all, and we haven't even touched the surface of them. All the instances of the last 3 months we've talked about and covered on the show involving the harassment of signature gatherers, the assault of signature gatherers, people who've been arrested for it, initiative forms that have been destroyed, stolen, torn up. Now this case involving me and the woman in Spokane. This isn't just people, you know, walking by and they're just angered by it spontaneously. No, they're being fueled by the lies and the hateful, dangerous rhetoric of entities like WA Families for Freedom, the Washington State Democratic Party, and the Washington Education Association, the teachers union. Their rhetoric is so dangerous. Teachers in a union. Their rhetoric is so dangerous that it's leading people to commit crimes because they believe what they're reading. And so it goes beyond like, oh, woe is me, some chick on TikTok is unhinged. This is about the true danger of words. And I don't believe words are violence, but I believe the wrong words that reach the ears of the wrong person can have disastrous outcomes. And look, if the Democratic Party and the Teachers Union and WA Families for Freedom was out there just on the merits, just saying, hey, we think boys are girls if they want to be, and they should be able to play, and just making that argument, or we don't believe parents should be able to have a say in their child's education, making that argument, trying to pitch that, then it would be a different situation. But they're out there peddling dangerous lies like we want to touch kids. And you don't think unhinged people will take that and run with it? So it's just wild. Again, words have consequences, actions have consequences, but they do not seem to care because these attacks on the initiatives aren't relenting. And now this woman could wind up in jail over it. I don't know if it'll go that far. I hope it does because she has two cases. She's clearly dangerous, but, you know, this is still King County in Washington State after all. All right. Coming up next, speaking of this issue, on Sundays with Subscribers, we had on a Spokane pediatrician talking about a variety of things, including, are we going to expose kids to invasive genital exams? No, but we'll also, we talked to her more broadly about the issues around gender medicine. We're going to play a clip of that interview coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. And this is a critical time to do so. Why? Because the legislative session is almost upon us. And starting yesterday, that's the pre-filing bill period. In fact, we're going to talk about one of these bills that was pre-filed momentarily. But what that means is we're going to start to get a glimpse, slowly but surely, as the days go by in December, of the types of unhinged bills that are going to be proposed in Olympia. And some of them, I guarantee, will have to do with housing providers and landlords and trying to make life even more miserable for you. So you need to make sure that you have a friend in your corner that is the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Become a member today. RHAWA.org. RHAWA.org. Their mission is empowering housing providers. Okay, so we had a great interview on Sundays with Subscribers, and actually this is good. We had a ton of new subscribers join us in the last 2 days, and so one of the things you should absolutely do is go back and watch some of the fantastic episodes of Sundays with Subscribers that you've missed. One of them was just a couple days ago with Dr. Erica Lee. She is a pediatrician in Spokane, and she is leading the charge to try to restore medical rigor back to the gender conversation. She wrote this article in Reality's Last Stand. It's called A Pediatrician's Manifesto for the Modernization of Gender Medicine. Postmodern medicine may superficially resemble modern medicine, yet it seeks to dismantle its underlying philosophy. And the argument that she makes is this whole concept of gender medicine and the medicalization of children and even, yes, adults who believe that they were born in the wrong body and they're a different gender. She says that somewhere along the line, the medical field just abandoned all desire for scrutiny. You have these other areas of medicine that have this intense scientific rigor that really dictates how they treat patients and how they deal with patients. And then you have gender medicine, where they're letting feelings and ideology dictate how they treat sometimes kids with irreversible surgeries or hormones. And what's interesting about Dr. Lee is she didn't always feel this way. In fact, when she, this is, gosh, 10 years ago or so, she was making rounds, you know, hearing from different lecturers, and she actually bought into very early on the idea of transing kids, as an example, and she has since come around.
I would say that I am somebody who is very interested in maintaining a set of principles rather than being taken away by tribalism. I started learning a little bit about postmodernism and queer theory, and I realized that this field of medicine does not conform to standards of modern medicine at all. And I talked about that in my article called A Pediatrician's Manifesto to modernize gender medicine. I consider the influence of queer theory and postmodernism on this particular branch of medicine to be a completely different categories of medicine altogether called postmodern medicine. The philosophy of postmodern medicine, I consider to be as different from modern medicine as pre-modern medicine, which would include practices like witch burning,
right,
and
bleeding,
and bleeding and putting hexes on people.
So, you know, you could detail, and I think it's 8 different ways in which in this arena there seem to be different standards. What are some examples that you would give where, you know, traditional standards of actual modern medicine were being foregone for the sake of this gender argument?
I would love to talk about that. So when all doctors going through medical school, we get taught how to go through the thinking process when a patient comes to us for help. And we have to gather both subjective information and objective information. For example, you come to me with abdominal pain. I will ask you, where is the location of the pain? How long does it last? What does it feel like? Is it sharp, dull? Does it radiate? So the description of your symptoms will give me some clue of whether you have like constipation, appendicitis, gallbladder disease, pancreatitis, what have you. But I can't just start treating you based on my impression, based on your description of the symptoms. I have to go into the real world and obtain data to confirm or disconfirm my initial impression. So that may look like getting a CT scan. Hey, is the appendix inflamed? Getting an ultrasound of the gallbladder. Is there something, you know, are there stones or dilations of the ductal system around the liver and the gallbladder? I would get laboratory results. Is there an element of infection that is at play? Getting objective data is a tether to reality. I can't just start treating you based on subjective information. What if you came to me in a panic attack and says, doctor, I am sure I'm having a heart attack, and I start treating you for that? I mean, that would be a catastrophe. Same thing. Oh, I feel tired for like the last month. I'm sure I have cancer. I can't just start giving you chemotherapy based on your subjective description.
So why do you think in this arena, subjective descriptions have been allowed?
Well, subjective description is important. Like, it is very important to listen to patients' experience. Mm-hmm. In fact, that is part of the therapeutic relationship, and the therapy itself is by lending a compassionate ear and believing that the patient is suffering. But that alone, it's necessary but not sufficient. And we have to be able to have a tether to reality by letting objective data to confirm or disconfirm our initial impression. Otherwise, we're doing the patient a terrible, grave disservice.
Yeah, just love Dr. Lee. She's great. So you can watch that full interview on Sundays with subscribers. But while we're here, real quick, I mentioned the dangerous misinformation that's being spread by Wall Families for Freedom about the Let's Go Washington initiatives. And one of them being, and this seems to be what they think, and their, you know, campaign advisors think will work, is convince the public that we can't prevent boys from being in girls' sports because that would expose kids to invasive genital exams because they'll have to prove their gender. So I asked Dr. Lee, as a working pediatrician in our state, whether there's any merit to that argument. We're going through this debate in Washington state right now. There's an initiative about that would keep biological boys out of girls' sports. And one of the chief arguments against it is that it would subject these student athletes to invasive physical exams where everyone would be forced to prove that they're a boy or a girl. From a pediatrician perspective, doesn't that happen anyway? Isn't that what a physical
does? That happens anyway.
Does?
You got it. Yeah. Yes, all adolescents should be monitored for how they go through puberty to make sure that their hormone system is working correctly and they're going to grow and develop normally and go through puberty appropriately. So it is completely routine for every developing adolescent to have a genital exam at some point during their pubertal years. And all that doctor have to do is to take a half a second or less to look at the relevant anatomy and document it in the chart. That's it.
And for any minor who might be in sports in school who's been seeing a pediatrician, that pediatrician will know whether they're a boy or a girl.
Absolutely. And they're obligated to document it truthfully in the medical record.
There you go. She says, take... I just have to laugh because I'm thinking in my mind about the juxtaposition between Dr. Lee being like, it'd take a half a second for me as a pediatrician to tell you if that's a boy or a girl, right? And then we played those clips the other day from the expert in genetics from the that was speaking to the Washington Education Association, the teachers union, saying, well, I couldn't even do a genetic makeup on someone and test their DNA and tell you for sure if they're a boy or a girl. Who do you trust? The wackadoodle teacher who claims that she's an expert in genetics, who says that she can't even sequence your genome to determine your gender, or the working pediatrician who has doctor's appointments with kids every day, who says it would take her a half a second to tell you if it's a boy or a girl? The lies that these people will spin, and frankly, that some voters will believe because of the messenger, is just wild to me. I mean, use your brain. I'll watch that full interview with Dr. Lee on Sundays with subscribers. You can become a subscriber on UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. I don't know what noise that was. I don't think that was a snort. I make lots of bodily noises on this show, just a heads up. All right, this is really my favorite time of the year because we're gearing up for the legislative session in Washington State, and December 1st is when lawmakers can start to pre-file bills. So what comes into focus are the priorities of what various lawmakers are going to introduce in the coming year, and there's always some fun ones. This might be the only tax I support this year, full-heartedly. And Democrats, they say we're in a budget crisis. They should support any new tax that Republicans are willing to support, too. So State Senator Leonard Christian, who's a Republican, has pre-filed Senate Bill 5819, and it would carve out a special tax for paid protesters. And now this is part of additional taxes that were passed. There was a bill where there was all these new carve-outs for additional taxes. This last legislative session, where of course they passed like $9 to $12 billion in new taxes. And so this would just add on to there and would tax paid protesters as temporary staffing services, because the legislature added new taxes for temporary staffing services. And so what Senator Christian is arguing is, hey, if you're hiring protesters to go out and picket at some event to make it look like you got more support than you do, are those not temporary staffing services? So it says temporary staffing services would also mean providing workers as paid protesters to any person, business, or other entity for limited periods of time to supplement or support a public protest on a contract or for fee basis. Well, that seems fair. So how would Democrats argue against that, right? Because the only people hiring paid protesters are the Democratic Party. Conservatives are hardly protesting at all. I wish sane people in the state would protest more. I always try to encourage you guys to get out and get engaged and, you know, try to out activists the left, because it seems to work for them. And so I think getting involved and showing that you're out there, but I don't want fake people there. I don't want paid people there. I want real tax-paying citizens to be there expressing their opinion. It's really just the left. We know that. That's hiring paid protesters. And I don't know how they argue against this. They're taxing all these other arenas. They're taxing all these other entities for temporary staffing services. Paying someone to protest for an hour is absolutely a temporary staffing service. So we'll be watching Senate Bill 5819 very closely. Maybe the only tax I'll support and the only tax Democrats will argue against. Gotta love it. Coming up next, remember the former president of UW who left her post in shame after letting anti-Semites take over the campus? Well, she is now part of the new socialist Seattle mayor's transition team. We'll discuss. First, if you're concerned about the impact that the AI bubble might have on your retirement portfolio, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, and he'll give you a one-on-one assessment of how AI could impact your retirement portfolio, whether it's properly positioned, protected against undue risk. He can also give you a preview for what's coming in in 2026, talk about how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios, plus give you a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. And as you know, Zach Abraham joins me every week on Swamp Watch. We just dropped a new episode last night. You got to watch the end of it because he gives this killer advice for parents and even grandparents about how the most important gift you can give your kids is financial stability and a financial future. It was just such sound advice, and he's just full of it. So help let him help you make sure that your retirement is properly protected. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. You can schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review. And while you're there, subscribe to Zach's daily market recap. Again, that's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, Washington State, it's all about failed politicians and failed leaders failing up. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, Seattle's new socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, is assembling the A-team, or the D-team, probably, more likely, by the looks of it. From our friend Ari Hoffman at KVI, Seattle socialist mayor-elect taps ex-UW president at Center of Anti-Semitism Firestorm for transition team. Not a surprise that the socialist, Free Palestine mayor taps someone who was deeply criticized by the Jewish community for her handling of anti-Semitic protests, riots, and a campus takeover, where she just let the pro-Gaza, pro-Hamas crowd take over the quad at the campus for months on end, scrawling anti-Semitic graffiti all over the beautiful old buildings at UW, and then didn't do anything about it until her own home was vandalized by the same people. So now she's going to be on Katie Wilson's transition team, specifically in the area of civic narrative and major initiatives. So Katie Wilson says she's assembling an expert group to help deliver on the vision of affordable, accessible, innovative city, of an affordable, accessible, and innovative city. And so in this policy area for major initiatives, one of the members of the transition team is Anna Marie Cossey, who is the president emeritus of the University of Washington. And I will tell you, I've been watching closely Katie Wilson's transition team, and there are some people on it. Like, there's some people from the business community who've been put on the transition team. I struggle with that a lot. Well, let me get to that in a moment. Let me finish up with the former failed UW president, because it's not just the anti-Semitism issue. She also has run that university and ran that. She was there for a long time, ran it into the ground. And KVI points a little bit of this out. Beyond campus unrest and ideological controversies, Cossey's critics also point to her role in the collapse of the Pac-12 conference, widely regarded as a catastrophic shakeup for West Coast college athletes. In fact, some media outlets said that that whole ordeal unmasked her as a charlatan. As Cossey steps down in 2025, the UW faced serious financial challenges. She warned of looming budget cuts, potential layoffs, and reductions in staff and support services as state and federal funding dropped. For opponents, these warnings were interpreted not as an unavoidable reality, but as a consequence of a decade of mismanagement. So it wasn't just allowing anti-Semites to take over the campus. It was mismanagement of the budget. It was a mismanagement of the important athletic program. And so on a variety of fronts, she was a failed UW president. But this is Washington State, after all. And so now she's going to be on the transition team for the new mayor on major initiatives. Sound choice. But as I was ranting about, I've been watching some of these people placed on the transition team. And I really struggle with this. And I'm curious what you guys think. Because if you're a member or a business leader, right, like the Downtown Seattle Association is one of the many business organizations in Seattle. Do you cozy up to the new mayor and just stay close to her in the hopes that you can have a better working relationship, or do you tell her to kick rocks? Here's my thought process on this. Politicians should be knocking down the door of the business community to work with them. They should be the ones reaching out, begging to work with them, trying to build and foster a good relationship, because they need them for their tax base, for their revenue, for all the things that Katie Wilson promised on the campaign trail. They aren't possible without a healthy, robust business environment. But in Seattle, it's always the other way around, where you've got these business leaders who, you know, kowtow and sort of meek and meager to the politicians and the mayor, even if it's a socialist who literally hates business and who hates corporations. And so part of me thinks that they should make her an outcast. And I know you're probably like, well, Brandy, that's easy for you to say. You're a podcast host. But I think they shouldn't even speak to her. I literally think they shouldn't even speak to her. And they shouldn't be part of her transition team. And they should make her come to them on hands and knees, begging for them to help the city. Because at this point, like, to me, they've tried to placate progressives for long enough. And it always backfires. It never works. Like with Amazon, for example. You know, they've tried to placate the progressives and act like this very woke company or whatever it is. Okay, what did that get you? It got you nothing. It got you taxed and vilified and taxed and vilified and taxed and vilified. And I just think at the end of the day, let her discover that she needs you more than you need her. And so I would say absolutely not. I'm not going to be part of your transition team. When you realize what you and your progressive friends have done to this city and what's that socialism is a bad idea, then you come back to us and you come and court us. That's kind of my opinion on the matter. All right. We have a lot to discuss in national news coming up next. First, if you are thinking about getting a new roof or that it might be time, reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing. If your roof is just fine, well, Valentine offers other services as well. Right now, they can do custom holiday lighting, which I think is a really cool service, can spare you the time and the danger of installing your holiday lights on your own, the potential arguments with your spouse about, when are you going to do this? I asked you to put the lights in last week. You haven't done it yet. But beyond holiday lighting, they can also do new gutters, clean them, install them, attic insulation, even exterior cleaning. But if new roof, you're thinking I've got a leak or something like that, they'll come out, they'll assess your roof. If your roof can't be repaired, they're just going to repair it. They're not going to push you into buying a new roof. But if you do need a new roof, they have flexible financing options, including zero down and 0% interest. So taking care of your home has never been easier. Schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING. Please tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. Valentine's mission to serve and care for our neighbors with the purpose of creating a long-lasting impact and peace of mind. So 206-ROOFING. Best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest, 3 years in a row, I might add. All right, some national news, but really I see some similarities here. There's a lot of talk right now about all the fraud that took place within the Somali community in Minnesota. But the reason why that fraud was allowed to continue for so long, even when people suspected that there was something wrong, is the same reason why we have so much fraud in certain taxpayer-funded programs in Washington State. What is that central reason? Race. And an inability in blue cities and blue states, a lack of desire to be characterized as racist for looking into where tax dollars are spent when it comes to organizations or communities of color. This is a real thing. In fact, now the New York Times is even being honest about it. Gosh, I wonder when the Seattle media will catch up. So first, a little bit of background, because you've probably heard a ton about this. There's the back and forth between Governor Tim Walz and Donald Trump, where Trump called him the R word. So a lot of it stems from this. So this is from Time Magazine. What to know about Trump's targeting of Somalis in Minnesota and allegations of fraud. So it goes through three different instances, and even Time Magazine, although they're trying to spin this as Trump, you know, hates immigrants or whatever it is, even they have to acknowledge that there has been a ton of fraud involving the Somali population in Minnesota. And I can also say I'm from Minnesota. Probably around the time I was in middle school, we really started to have an influx of Somali refugees and immigrants into Minnesota. And it was a very obvious thing. And I lived in northern Minnesota, so far away from Minneapolis, where sort of most of the Somali refugees are located. But Time says ton of fraud involving the Somali community. So three things. A COVID-19 era child nutrition program operated by nonprofit organization Feeding Our Future with ties to the Somali community was implicated in an alleged $300 million fraud scheme with more than 70 defendants. It was dubbed by the Justice Department as the largest COVID-19 fraud scheme in the country. The case involved individuals creating companies that billed Minnesota agencies for meals that didn't exist, meals they never served. Federal prosecutors said the company owners pocketed the funds instead, spending them on luxuries like cars and overseas trips. In August, a Somali-born leader of the fraud scheme was sentenced to 28 years in prison. So that's number one. In September, totally different instance, eight individuals were charged with wire fraud for allegedly defrauding the now defunct Housing Stabilization Services Program, a component of Minnesota's Medicaid offerings. And they want to fight Donald Trump for trying to put extra checks and balances in place with Medicaid. So the defendants were accused of collectively billing Medicaid about $8 million by offering vulnerable individuals, many of whom were due to be released from drug or alcohol rehab facilities, assistance to look for housing, only for those individuals to remain homeless. Gosh, sounds familiar, doesn't it? Third instance of fraud involving the Somali community in recent years. The same month, another fraud case emerged, this time involving the state's autism program. A Somali woman and her parents allegedly falsely certified children to qualify for autism programs and hadn't their parents pay offs for the cooperation. The defendants intend to plead guilty to the charges against them. So we've got Somalis in Minnesota who are defrauding a program meant to feed hungry kids, who are defrauding a program meant to help house the homeless, and are even defrauding a program meant to help autistic children by giving parents of non-autistic children money to basically say their autistic child received these services. So that's a problem, right? And there's a through line there. It does involve members of the Somali community. And even Time Magazine is admitting that. And I do want to note on the one that's gotten the most attention, the COVID-19 era food program, where it had more than 70 defendants. In fact, that case is still ongoing. Because just last month, the Department of Justice added a 78th defendant. And this guy, so it says, I'm going to butcher the name, Abdurrashid Bixi Dool, age 36, was charged in a 7-count indictment with wire fraud and money laundering for his participation in the Feeding Our Future fraud scheme. Dool cooperated and served on the boards of two Minnesota nonprofits, Bilal Mosque, Inc. and Multicultural Resource Center, Inc. Dool also served as the president of MRC. Through those companies, Dool and a second person identified in the indictment as a conspirator participated in the federal child nutrition program under the sponsorship of Feeding Our Future. Dool and Conspirator A purported to operate two food sites, the Bilal food site in Pelican Rapids, Minnesota, and the MRC food site in Moorhead, Minnesota. However, he falsely claimed to be serving over 40,000 meals to children every week. But they weren't, of course, and they were pocketing the money. So they weren't feeding kids, they were taking the money. Okay? So all this got a lot more attention in the past week because Christopher Rufo at City Journal did an expose that tied, this gets crazy, that tied some of that money being defrauded from Minnesota taxpayers to money being funneled to the terror group Al-Shabaab. The headline of the article, "The largest funder of Al-Shabaab is the Minnesota taxpayer. How some of the state's welfare funds ended up in the hands of a welfare group." So City Journal does this, and even the New York Times, CBS News authenticated their reporting. So they weren't even able to defend it as, oh, this is crazy Christopher Rufo and right-wing City Journal. I'll get to more on the New York Times reporting on this in a moment because I was actually astonished by the fairness and the unbiased nature of their reporting. So all of this has brought new attention to failed VP candidate and strange, strange man, Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota. So he is being asked about this. I don't know. Is there a shift happening in legacy news? I'm not sure. He was asked about this on Meet the Press, and did he bob and try to duck and dive some of those questions?
Dozens of people of East African descent have been charged, convicted, and sentenced for stealing more than $1 billion in taxpayer money from government programs during COVID. As you know, Governor, that is more than Minnesota spends each year to run its Department of Corrections. So I want to give you a chance to respond to this. Do you take responsibility for failing to stop this fraud in your state?
Well, certainly I take responsibility for putting people in jail. Minnesota is a generous state. Minnesota is a prosperous state, a well-run state. These are programs that were meant to serve students with autism, to housing and to making sure people had enough to eat. There's a reason Minnesota ranks as the top, lowest childhood poverty, best place for children to live. People are taking advantage of that, they're going to prison. That is totally disconnected with demonizing an entire group of people who came here fleeing civil war and created a vibrant community that makes Minnesota and this country better.
Okay, is it disconnected though? And he was also saying, well, it's not just the Somalis defrauding people. And I was like, that's your defense? Oh no, it's not just the Somalis. Other people are defrauding us as well. Other people are stealing taxpayer money as well. But clearly you've got a case with now 78 defendants, all but two of them, I believe, of East African descent. And you want to argue as if this isn't a problem with that population of people. Now, is every Somali person in Minnesota a fraudster? Of course not. But this is a significant enough issue across three different areas entirely, autism, homelessness, hunger, where you have this population of refugees defrauding the Minnesota taxpayer. And I didn't know that statistic that Kirsten Welker pointed out there, to the tune of more money than they spend running their entire Department of Corrections. It's wild. And that whole ordeal is why President Trump, in his Thanksgiving Day tweet, called Governor Walz the R word and then doubled down in this clip.
Many Americans do find an offensive word retarded. Do you stand by that claim of calling Tim Walz retarded?
Yeah, I think there's something wrong with him. Absolutely, sure.
You don't think
you have a problem with it? You know what? I think there's something wrong with him. Anybody that would do what he did, anybody that would allow those people into a state and pay billions of dollars out to Somalia. We give billions of dollars to Somalia. It's not even a country because it doesn't function like a country. It's got a name, but it doesn't function like a country. Yeah, there's something wrong with Walz.
Yeah. So here's the thing. And, you know, again, do you vilify an entire population of people? What is the best way to have a conversation about this that's productive? What is the most productive conversation to have? To me, I think it's the fact that this probably exists in every blue state in America. And I'm not saying fraud doesn't exist in red states. We've talked about fraud perpetrated in Florida before, but specifically fraud involving race-based state contracts. There is this phenomenon, especially post-2020 racial justice movement, post-George Floyd. And again, you're talking about Minnesota, where that was perhaps even more ideological than in our state, because that's actually where George Floyd died. And so you had all these race-based programs and race-based contracts. And, oh, we're going to give money and millions of dollars to this group because they're Black, this group because they're Black, this group because they're Hispanic, this group because they're gay, or whatever it is. And then, because it's ideological, Democrats who run those states don't want to properly have any oversight because they don't want to be accused of racism. And we see that happening in our state as well. But I give a lot of credit to the New York Times for pointing out an element of this fraud in Minnesota that I think allowed it to happen and to continue to happen. So the New York Times headline is "How Fraud Swamped Minnesota's Social Services System on Tim Walz's Watch." Red flags in the meals program surfaced in the early months of the pandemic, but the money kept flowing. In 2020, Minnesota Department of Education officials who administered the program became overwhelmed by the number of applicants seeking to register new feeding sites and began raising questions about the plausibility of some of the invoices. Feeding Our Future, the nonprofit group that was the largest provider in the pandemic program, responded with a warning. In an email, the group told the state agency that failing to promptly approve new applicants from, quote, minority-owned businesses would result in a lawsuit featuring accusations of racism that would be, quote, sprawled across the news. There you have it, the nut graph of this entire ordeal that is relevant to things happening in Washington state and other blue states right now. You have people in positions of power who have implemented race-based state contracts, race-based spending, race-based hiring. They did it during this period of time where they felt as if that's what they had to do. And even if they know it's wrong, like they did here, there were red flags at the very beginning. Wait a second. Are you feeding this many kids? These many new contracts? And they were told, if you don't approve these contracts, we'll sue you and we'll sprawl all over the news media that you're racist. We just had our whistleblower report that we've done several follow-ups on now that we broke at the end of October. State equity program here in Washington State became a fund for personal enrichment. We talked in depth about the community reinvestment program, which has gotten $250 million in taxpayer funds from Washingtonians, which was doled out to BIPOC organizations to help people of color get into homes, start businesses, pay off debt. And what happened? Well, a lot of it was used for personal enrichment. People who worked for the nonprofits, who were tasked with handing out the money, were buying themselves homes, were paying off their own debt, were starting their own businesses, were helping their kids buy homes with hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxpayer funds. And to this day, we broke that story the last week in October, I believe. We've done follow-ups because there's so much there. When I broke the initial story, I said, this is enough to keep every reporter in the state busy until the end of the year, looking into all these different organizations. How many legacy news outlets have looked into this story? One. Tacoma News Tribune did a story on it. Our friends at the Center Square, but they're not legacy news. They're a new, sane media outlet. Tacoma News Tribune, one story in 2 months. Why? The race angle. Until black media picks that story up, and there is, until a black reporter, or what is the Omari Salisbury with Converge Media, until someone in the black community gives the white press permission, basically, they won't do anything with it because they're scared of being called racist. And that's the exact reason why something like that is allowed to happen. Because, oh my God, it's race-based, so we can't do an audit because it'll look like we're targeting a race-based, you know, people of color. And that is, I mean, probably hundreds of billions of dollars that have been defrauded, misused, misspent, because people know, like the Somalis in Minnesota know, that they can get away with it because of the color of their skin, and these stupid, stupid politicians who will just turn the other way because of the color of their skin. It's just wild stuff. And this is happening everywhere. I'm glad the New York Times is finally admitting this is what it is. And that's the most honest news story I've seen from the New York Times in a while. Speaking of the media, this is fascinating. I don't know how I feel about this. And then we'll get to our show poll, which is related to this topic. So the White House has launched a new media bias tracker page, which, like most things the White House does, I think is hilarious. Does it go too far? I don't know. You tell me. So they have literally a page at the White House. Misleading, biased, exposed, media offender of the week. And it goes through, and the White House, like, you know, if they feel like a story is unfair, inaccurate, they will expose it on this government website. They'll label the offender of the week, and then they'll explain what's wrong with the story. So I guess the offenders of the week this week are the Boston Globe, CBS News, and The Independent. All on the naughty list this week. So you can go in there, you can search a headline, it'll share, you know, a claim that a news outlet made, and from there you can choose a publication, a reporter, or a category, so it has all these search functions on it, right? So if you want to, like, look for a story about a specific thing, it'll bring up if there's any news articles that have got the ire of the White House, and then you can look at, like, you see that there, you can search by reporters to see if a reporter has had multiple lies or multiple whatever that has landed them on this site. So let's go through just a couple examples. So one of the stories that they said was wrong was from the Washington Post, lists the two reporters in there. It has the claim they make that the U.S. Coast Guard will no longer classify swastikas and nooses as hate symbols. And they categorize that as a lie. And then they put, this is the truth. The Washington Post claim isn't remotely true. And they posted the article without official comment from the Coast Guard. The Department of Homeland Security stated that the article is unequivocally false. So I don't mind this at all, actually. As long as when they correct something, they're correcting it with the information that the outlet should have included. So let's see. You can also choose, like, if I click on lie, it brings up other, because they'll categorize these into, like, just bias or actual lies. And so this one they say is a Washington Post article that is in both categories, both a bias and a lie. And the claim they make, ICE moves to shackle some 180,000 immigrants with GPS ankle monitors. First of all, I don't even have to read it to know what the bias is. They're going to shackle them? No, that's what an ankle monitor is. It's not a shackle. It doesn't attach both your legs together. It's just one leg. You can still move, you know, move your legs. You can walk and stuff. It's just going to track your location. It says, the truth, ankle monitoring devices have been used to track criminals for decades and are considered uncontroversial in mainstream America jurisprudence. Yeah, in fact, the activists love ankle monitors because it means somebody can be out of prison. So they sometimes push for that. Like, hey, can you release them and they'll be on electronic home monitoring? But according to the Washington Post, they're going to shackle them. Let's do one more. This is just fun. Let's see here. There's another category. It's called left-wing lunacy. That's how this one's categorized. It's from ABC News. Anna Navarro, and it has her as a reporter, but she's a commentator. The claim, Trump White House lashes out at The View co-host Anna Navarro over alligator Alcatraz comments. Quote, can't get any dumber. And then it says, the truth of this is the real horrible human beings are the violent criminals being held at alligator Alcatraz, including the illegal alien murderer who slit the throat of an elderly woman in Florida and set her house on fire. Law enforcement and government officials who lay their lives on the line to protect our homeland deserve gratitude, not ridicule. So this, to me, is a less appropriate use of a government website. So if you're going to actually point out, like, hey, they lied in this story, here is the actual truth, it's very black and white, no, you know, we're not doing this, or no, it's not a shackle. But this is like, they're mad that a talk show host called government officials racist and horrible human beings over alligator Alcatraz, so they want to just respond. I think respond to her on X. I don't know if I need this on a government website. So I'm very curious what you guys think, but I'll ask you guys about media, new media, all of this in our daily subscriber show poll coming up. Well, actually, let's just do it right now. So I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you believe independent media on the whole has higher editorial standards than legacy news outlets? So I gave you three options. Yes, no, or unsure. Yes, no, or unsure. Nicole, do you believe independent media on the whole has higher editorial standards than legacy news outlets?
You know what? That really just depends on the outlet. For us, yes.
Oh, I 100% believe we do.
But that's not necessarily the case because anybody can consider themselves mm-hmm. independent. But the people that we know and that we interact with, yes.
Yes.
So I guess more, yes, but it's a tough question because I also think that there's an element of this need for attention, and so it brings in a lot of people just looking for that too. So
yeah, I think when I think of independent media, maybe I should have specified, I think more of like some sort of established form, like independent media, not some person on X who's, you know, just posting garbage under a pseudonym or something like that. But, you know, I do worry sometimes about independent media that, you know, they're not holding themselves to the standards that they were upset that legacy media wasn't holding itself to.
Right.
And they really think that they can just sort of get away with doing that because they're conservative or whatever it is. So you have to be truthful about what you are. What are you and mm-hmm. what role are you serving? For instance, I always make sure to say, I'm a political commentator. I mm-hmm. give my opinion. We do journalism and reporting, obviously, mm-hmm. as part of making sure that my opinions that I give in the show are based in fact.
Right.
And when we find out that they weren't, we correct it. And that's the best that we can do, right? And that's the editorial standard. So my issue is when people pretend to be something they're not. Like, are you an activist? Then just be an activist. Are you a commentator giving your opinion? Then just be that. Don't pretend to be something that you're not. Well, and that's where independent media, I think, gets a little confusing.
Right. And it's also it's become difficult because most of those independent media outlets are typically put into a conservative or a left wing category. Yep. And I think that complicates it as well.
Yeah, 100%. So let's see. 76% of you are saying yes, that you do believe independent media on the whole has higher editorial standards. 20% unsure. 5% says no. Jocelyn Martin, I think it really depends on how critically thinking the viewer base is and how credible the reporter is. Weiss Castle. Some certainly do. BillO'Reilly.com is one of the best, but there are a lot that are not very good internet news outlets. You have to be very careful. And I agree. You have to be careful no matter what you're consuming. Polgy, I don't trust most media to be fair and balanced in their news coverage. However, a few have earned my respect, including Undivided. Oh, thank you. And The Daily Wire. Reporting facts gets in the way of opinion at most media. And I always say a good gauge is, are they willing to correct errors? Mm-hmm. Are they willing to correct errors in a way that's acceptable? And that goes for major media outlets, independent media outlets, streamers, whatever it is. If they're willing to say, hey, I got that wrong, here's the reality, I think that's a good sign that that's someone who's trustworthy. And it's really the bare minimum of what you can ask of people who are disseminating information. Marie, I think the standards should be the same, but unfortunately, legacy media feels insulated from repercussions in a way independent media does not. It does seem more and more, like back when I was working in news, a major mistake could cost you your career, and more so at the network level. But there were real consequences for your reputation and the reputation of your outlet where you were very careful not to make a mistake. I think I agree with you that those same repercussions don't seem to exist today, where it's sort of like, hey, just don't say anything about it. I mean, we had to issue a cease and desist to a newspaper, The Olympian, to get a correction on a story. And it's like, before, if I reach out to you, like I'll give KUOW credit. And I think The Stranger once too, where they just said something blatantly false about me. And I emailed, I asked for a correction, I explained why it was wrong, and they corrected it. And it's like, okay, great. But The Olympian ignored our emails, wouldn't respond, acted like the problem didn't exist, they didn't get their reporting wrong, left up the initial story, and it took a lawyer to get them to just say, hey, we got this wrong. It's just so wild. Mm-hmm. Let's see. A fugitive mama on X says you got to be careful with both. I agree. That's the key. Independent minded, always consider the source. And it's not so much about organizations and outlets on the whole for me. It's about individuals, you know, because there could be some good reporters at The New York Times and some bad reporters at The New York Times. And usually it is on an individual basis, the journalistic standards that they hold themselves to. All right, we'll get to comments from our live stream. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. We all have to have insurance, just a fact of life. You gotta do it. And so, do you have the best insurance? Do you have insurance that's actually going to cover you in the event that the unthinkable happens? And do you have it at the best price? Those are kind of the basic questions, right? Well, let First Mark Insurance figure that out for you. Don't lift a finger. Reach out to First Mark Insurance. Well, I guess you have to lift a finger to type in FirstMarkInsurance.com. And then from there, schedule the First Mark Challenge. Then you're off to the races. So it just takes a little bit of time to schedule and have that conversation with First Mark. And they go out, they do all the hard work. And for a lot of Undivided viewers, it has paid off. Christine says they're saving her $10,000 a year between her two business policies, her home, and three vehicles. $10,000 a year, that's insane. That's a vacation, a nice vacation for you and the whole family. So FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, comments from the live stream. Again, sorry we sprung the show 2 hours early. So people were like, what's going on? Why is the stream going? I'm going to head down to Olympia to attend a press conference that State Representative Sean Scott is having, introducing a new $5.5 billion tax on new businesses. So we're going to hit the road after the show today. And if you're listening to this taped and not live, then ignore everything I'm saying. Dems rally today for raising taxes. Old Sub Sailor says Texas will be happy about this tax. Stand by for huge corporate relocations. The socialist Dems want the state to fail. Brian K. Throw Washington down the abandoned well fund. What was he calling it? The Washington Well Fund? Yeah, abandoned well fund is probably a better one. Yeah. Ricky Bobby, the normals will pick up the tax burden as soon as these companies leave. It happens every time. When the companies are gone, there's no one left but the normies. Dune and Bird Dog Crew. Brandy, you should show a Google Map picture of Microsoft's buildings. That would give people perspective on what there is to lose. And I don't know if they care. Maybe they just don't care. On the woman charged with harassment for threatening me, Ollie Sasquatch, she's willing to drive to your house, but not a court appearance. Yep, there it is. That's a great point. Not the real Batman. Rose, nose ring theory in action again. Why do so many of them have nose rings? And colored hair.
Or she had pink hair. Eyebrow. Yep. Eyebrow or nose. All of them.
Hair, I tell you, we've got to do a study of the hair dye. There's something in the pink, purple, blue hair dye that's just driving people nutty.
I had a friend who just dyed her hair this like fuchsia, purpley pink color, and she only kept it for about 5 weeks because she said the way people looked at her was just, she's pretty conservative.
Like,
and she's
like,
people
an just
assumed I was liberal and I couldn't handle it.
Too funny. Michael O'Hagan, there it is. Financial hardship. She's dependent on the socialist democratic machine and is totally dependent on their handouts. Pediatrician blasting gender medicine. Matthew Cook, it really shows an arrogance that they think the majority of people, even in Washington, buy into this and buy into their false narratives. Well, a majority of people vote like that. A majority of people send people to Olympia who want boys to play against girls. And there's a majority of people fall for these lies because they spend so much money. Just wait. Wait until before the election when these are going to be on the ballot next year. And wait until they're airing ads on TV that say that these initiatives will lead to invasive genital exams. Because they're going to do it. It's wild.
It's similar to the racism thing. They just don't want to speak out about against it. The people that support the initiatives are just quiet.
Yep.
And, you know, they're louder.
100%. Todd Emoto, you have to undergo a sports physical every year to play a sport in Washington public schools. So what's the big deal? There isn't one. They're totally manufacturing the issue. On the bill that would tax paid protesters, to protest against paid protesters getting taxed will totally happen. Yes, Batman, it will. A paid protest to protest against paid protesters getting taxed. 100%. Julie Kennedy on the UW, former UW president failing up. What's the percentage of white liberal ladies on her transition team? Good question. Is it diverse enough? We'll have to do the math and decide whether it's diverse enough.
To see.
Minnesota's Somali scam. Why? It's ridiculous how people cry racism to being held accountable or even the whisper of being held accountable, but they get away with it. It works for them. And they got millions of dollars. They're profiting millions of dollars. Yeah, they're going to threaten people. Like, oh, we'll call you racist. And it's going to work. Paul L.R., sheer incompetence, giving millions of dollars without due diligence and no real program oversight. They were warned about this many times and ignored the warnings. John Burdick, these are all organized crime rings ignored by Democrats. Let's see. Moon Goddess, the mental illness is strong in that crazy nut. Referring, to Tim Walz. I thought you were referring to the woman in the videos. Nope, Tim Walz. Let's do a couple more. White House launching the bias news tracker. Last Robespierre, another waste of time and resources at the White House. What a shocker. While I enjoy calling out the media, the government isn't in any sort of position to be calling out the BS. If the people are spreading a fake news story about the White House, like where it's literally not true, I'm okay with the White House correcting that. I think it's fine. The White House spending time taking issue with the opinion of a lady on The View, that's a waste of time. It's so much more things.
To believe it's just somebody who's already working there that's doing this on the side.
Sure, Nicole.
Like, it's just, you know,
it's just something fun just for
added
them to do.
Their duties, I guess.
They should have their hands full, though, calling out real lies. I'm sure there's plenty of that. And one super chat for the road, Lil Miss J. Here's my donation for road treats for you all. I definitely will need a coffee and some sort of snack.
Yeah, that would
be nice. I love my snacks after the show. I'm always hungry. All right. Good comments per the usual. Coming up next, we'll get to our closing sanity check. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Elizabeth W. did just that, and she said it was such a wonderful experience. Working with them was stress-free and no pressure. I love how they offered the exact support that I needed. They were quick to respond to a few hiccups we had after I emptied the apartment and were overall just amazing to work with. I appreciate the support for a quick and easy sale. She said one of the things they needed for her house was she needed to make some cosmetic improvements. And then when she moved her stuff out, she realized she needed to make some even more cosmetic improvements that she hadn't seen when all her furniture was in the house. So they helped her. They coordinated everything. It's called their Listing Boost Concierge Service. They even manage the contractor, etc. So it takes all the stress out of the process for you. So like Elizabeth W. found out, 5 stars, working with Wes Jones is just a better way to sell your home. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Reach out, use their home value calculator. I think that's a good place to start to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. All right, with that, wow, it's 11 o'clock. So weird. I'm in the twilight zone. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Speaking of socialists and government leeches and fraudsters, I thought this was a good clip to end the show with today. So Elon was doing an interview with an entrepreneur from India, and he had this advice. Just, I think it's good life advice in general, but advice for making money.
I'm a big fan of anyone who wants to build. So I think anyone who wants to, you know, make more than they take has my respect. You know, a net contributor to society. It's kind of like the pursuit of happiness. You know, if you want to create something valuable financially, you don't pursue that. It's best to actually pursue providing useful products and services. If you do that, money will come as a natural consequence of that. But just be focused on having the output be worth more than the input.
Making more than you take. And why would you not? I can't imagine wanting to take more than I make. I just can't imagine that would give me any sort of sense of meaning in my life. And I'm not saying there aren't some people who fall on hard times, but we're in this mindset where we all think we deserve things, so we should be able to take things, and it doesn't matter how much we contribute to society. That's got to flip, because that's never going to make you happy and it's never going to make you successful. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's early edition of Undivided. If you just joined us because you're like, wow, I'm free at 10 a.m. and I can watch Brandy's show live, don't get used to it. Our show is at noon Pacific time, as it will be again tomorrow. But I'm going to head down to Olympia. Hopefully Sean Scott's feeling like he wants to answer some questions from the media. We'll see how many people are there. He's going to be unveiling a $5.5 billion tax on businesses that will send jobs out of the state. Does he care? I don't know. Maybe it's all part of the plan. All right. You can still subscribe to support the show. You missed out on our Cyber Monday deal, but that doesn't mean you can't subscribe to support the show. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. While you're there, shop our merch store. What else? I don't think there's anything else. I'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. We won't mess with you tomorrow. Tomorrow at noon. Regular time. See you then.